food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
And you are listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Lots of things to talk about today. Wendy Wilson will be joining us for the first 20 minutes of the program, and after that, we'll be talking about the markets, we'll be talking about oil, we'll be talking about gas, we'll be talking about food stamps, we'll be talking about all kinds of things, so make sure you stay tuned. But first, let's go ahead and get to the market reports today. The market reports today, a little bit of pressure on gold, still above $1,300, down $12 today at $1,311. You have silver down 16 at $1,976. Platinum was up 3 at $1,444, along with palladium up 3 at $736. USDX today, of course, was trading a lot stronger today, 0.77 at 82.41. Crude oil was up big, almost $3 today, 2.74 at 107.77. Today you had the S&P cross the 1700 point for the first time, along with the Dow Jones Industrial Average. And, of course, the Russell 2000 Index, they were all on track to set new records today. And, of course, prior to the opening of this morning's market, you had a positive read on China's manufacturing. So that kind of helped shore up on the Asian markets. Then they came out with the U.S. market. Prior to the U.S. market opening, the government reported the unemployment claims fell last week. And then after the market opened, a trade group announced that the U.S. factories revved up production last month. And then throughout the day, you had company earning reports that had some winners, a few losers. And, of course, that gave us over 100-point increase in the Dow. It's 127 to the upside, 15,626. And, of course, that is an all-time closing high. Yeah, the NASDAQ up 50 at 36.75, and the S&P closing up 21 at 17.06. So that was enough for people to get rid of their bonds today. So you had the 10-year yield scoot up to 2.72%, up 0.13. So dumping those bonds and going into the stock market. You know, what a... I guess who said that there was one born every second?
There's at least one. That was a minimum number. That wasn't a maximum. Did you mention the U.S. dollar index?
Yes, I did. It was up 0.77.
Yeah, I know. It's a pretty good jump for one day.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. But you know what was interesting? The futures on the Dow, before it opened, I was up 100 points. When I turned it on at, 4 or 5 o'clock this morning, the futures were up 100 points. So it was there all day long. It didn't move, didn't, you know, you would think that it, with all these hoopla's on the reports, that it should have been a little bit stronger than 124, considering it was 100 points to the upside even before the market opened. So, but when you know that the markets are rigged and these are just digits, computer digits, who knows what they're doing on there?
What do you need to be a government employee right now, Melody, in terms of educational background?
Yes.
You need a degree in creative writing.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Is that it?
And if you've ever written a novel or at least some short stories on your own, then there's a place for you in government where you can tell stories to the American people.
All righty. Well, we have Wendy to tell us a story today. Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs joining us. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody. Hello, Al. How you doing?
Just fine. How you doing, Wendy?
Oh, I got a digit for the government I'd like to give them.
Yeah. Yeah, there's you're exactly right. And I don't doubt a lot of people agree with you.
Yeah. Well, and I've wrote a book. I guess I could write my way into a government job.
Yeah. Well, it was a book, truth or fiction?
That has to be a fiction, huh?
You have to have a background in fiction if you're going to work for the government.
Well, darn. I guess that squashes that. I guess
maybe you could find find a shrink that certifies that you're a pathological liar. Again, they're looking for people like that in government. And those of us, if you're a certified pathological liar, you can get a job.
Well,
but if
they
you
just
have
turn
a passion for telling the truth, you got a problem.
Well, they can just turn to Hollywood if they want creative writers, man.
Well, I understand that.
They already have.
Yeah.
Well, I think you have a list of questions there, Melody. You wanted to kind of stay targeted and focused on our segment, so let her rip.
Well, I think a lot of Americans have problems with they are wheat intolerant.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we got millions of people that are gluten intolerant. But here's something that's really interesting. Mother Earth News, which is a really very cool magazine. If you haven't picked one up at your health food store, it's kind of about, you know, self-preservation and preparedness. And anyway, there was a story in there about this woman, Carolyn, who was gluten intolerant, still is. She went over to Europe. She went to Hungary during the summer, early part of the summer, and she kind of gave in to temptation because if she ate wheat, she would pay for it later with a lot of gastrointestinal distress. So, but she just couldn't help it. You know, she's on those cobblestone streets, and there's this bakery and this bread and the crunchy, crusty. She ate bread. And then she says, well, I'll just be miserable later. But the misery never came. She ate cake, croissants, you name it, no problem. And she was wondering about that. So she got on the internet and she wanted to see if other people had the same experience when they came to Europe. Could they eat wheat without any problems when normally they're gluten intolerant? And she found out she wasn't alone. And so did a little digging, a little research, and they use more ancient wheats over there, and the way that they mill them is a little different. They use a softer wheat berry than we do here in the United States, and they use the whole meal, which makes a more, all-around fiber-rich bread and more oils in it. So you have to kind of eat the bread, use the grain right away if you're going to grind it, because the oils will turn rancid pretty quickly. And that pretty much is the reason. So if you want a more wholemeal type of flour, you can see if a distributor in the United States or a store can order it for you from Europe and make your own breads here in the States and not be, celiac disease, say goodbye.
Now, that's interesting, but are we talking about the wheat they're using is a different genetic strain, and that makes all or most of the difference? Or are we talking about the way they process the wheat, which is more important, or both important? What happens here?
Both of them, Al. Both of them, Al. Actually, mm-hmm. some of the ancient species, the Enequern, emmer, and spelt, they're not cultivating them anymore here in the United States. Modern agriculture is using six different classes of wheat with hundreds of different varieties, whereas over in Europe, they only use two classes of wheat. And, you know, basically we have that harder kernel wheat that's, you know, planted in the spring, harvested in the cooler months. They call it winter wheat. And then right around post-World War II, this is when they started using this wheat kernel. And people loved it because it made for fluffier types of products, breads, cakes, you name it.
Hostess Ho-Ho's.
Yeah. But the thing is, basically they started adding to it too. Bakeries, they would add this ultra fluffy gluten into their doughs and also their dough conditioners. And this is what makes things, you know, kind of just want to fly away off the table, fluffy. And this is the reason we have such poor of minerals, and a lot of those oils that they take out of the grain when they process it is cardiovascular healthy. And this is why we have a lot of heart disease, too.
Well, when you talk about removing the oils from the grain,
mm-hmm.
what is the portion of the grain? You're not just talking about, I don't think you're talking about just removing, the surface, the shell, essentially, that's on the grain. I'm using term shell, but that's probably not the proper. But the germ.
That's
what I was talking about.
They remove that.
All right, and I assume that's what they're removing, and that's where the oil disappears, and you wind up with just starch rather
right.
than starch plus oil plus perhaps some minerals, and I'm not sure what all is in the germ. So you're kind of saying that what they're doing in Europe is they are making the bread with wheat germ. All right? They're just not... In this country, we remove the wheat germ from the wheat. Then we sell the wheat germ in a separate container. You're saying they don't bother. They're essentially making their bread with wheat germ. Wouldn't be the same thing as adding wheat germ out of a jar today, but
it's a heavier flour. It definitely is handled differently. More grain, more oils. Typically, if you're going to process that type of grain that way, over in Europe, they freeze the flour and take it out when you need it, you know, to preserve it, or they grind it just before you need it. So
by freezing the flour, they're allowed. This goes to a different method of preservation. In this country, we essentially preserve the wheat after it's been ground by first removing the germ, removing the oil, so it doesn't turn rancid, because we keep the wheat in a can or in a bag on the counter in the kitchen, and it's not frozen.
Right.
But by virtue of freezing it, by virtue of freezing the flour right after it's been ground, mm-hmm. They can allow the germ to stay in the flour and still prevent the germ from turning rancid.
Yeah, and it's an interesting thing. The American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, you know, post-World War II, they showed this correlation globally, not just in the U.S., but when they started introducing this gluten-rich wheat variety, it increased the number of schizophrenic patients.
I don't know what that means. That has something to do... sure they found a way that supported one political party or the other one.
You could get pretty nasty when you had gas.
Yeah, but getting nasty is one thing, but schizophrenic is something else. I didn't expect that high gluten would make us uncomfortable, but I didn't expect it to make us schizophrenic, stand around talking to ourselves. What else have we got?
Well, I want to mention real quickly, in 1992, you know, the USDA food pyramid, a large chunk of the base of the pyramid was grain, right? right?
Yeah.
But in 2005, they kind of altered it, and it's called My Pyramid now, by the way. And they restructured that guideline to make the vegetable category almost equal to the wheat category. So
you regard that as an improvement? You see that as an improvement. Is that true or false?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I mean, we just grains are great and everything, but really you do have a mental health issue when you have too much grains. They see that over in Afghanistan and some of those countries where they don't have enough vegetables and meats, and it's more grains, and it stunts maturity, our reproductive development, and it does affect our mental health, so...
All right, so we shouldn't be allowed to eat pizza for probably 3 days before an election.
Oh, yeah, there you go, Al. There you go.
So we don't want any schizophrenics voting in the next election, so don't eat any pizza, no bread products, 3 days before no first Tuesday in November.
We can always count on Al's perspective, huh?
If someone has this problem, Wendy, do you have any herbs to counteract it?
Well, definitely it's going to be lifestyle driven, but there are some herbs that can help with digestive discomfort, obviously. So if you get a lot of discomfort there, your digestive herbs are going to be ginger root, fennel, and peppermint. If you have GERD or acid reflux, peppermint's going to be a problem for you, so you can DC that. You can also slide in some slippery elm if you tend to have irregular bowel functions, dysentery type of situation. So, yeah, there's some herbs that can help you, but if you can just get an organic grain that's not full of gluten, too much, modified gluten, then you'll do much better.
Well, I'm not sure that I... Your choice of words there, you're going to slide in some slippery elm. I'm not sure what that... I guess you would if it were slippery, but in any case... What's the one mineral you don't want to be without to neutralize lethal toxins?
The magnesium. Magnesium is awesome. It's definitely one of the major mineral elements that helps detox the body and protect it from lethal toxins. And they did this experiment, Al, Melanie. It was in the Journal of Experimental Medicine. But this was back in 1918 that they did this study. And it showed how magnificent magnesium really is to the body when it's exposed to lethal substances. So what they did is they took some rabbits, the poor little bunnies, and they injected them with lethal doses of sodium oxalate, which is a 100% mortality rate pretty quickly. The control group, some of the rabbits were injected immediately with a dose of magnesium, and the rabbits that received the magnesium had an 80% survival rate. So the magnesium research showed that it helps neutralize toxins that are life-threatening while it supports our immune system function.
But isn't magnesium difficult to absorb?
Well, you have to have boron with it and a little bit of calcium, and if you look at your magnesium, calcium, boron-rich plants, they're all together there. Green leafy vegetables, for instance, oranges, and some of your great herbs like horsetail and comfrey and oat straw and things like that. So there are some balances there when you see them all together, 2-to-1 ratio, which is excellent.
One of the things I've been told, you might be able to help me understand if it's true or false, I've been told that the difference between hemoglobin, which is essentially that which we find in our blood, and chlorophyll, the mechanism, the molecule mechanism, whatever, that we find in plants, is that hemoglobin has an iron, has a molecule of iron, where chlorophyll has a molecule of magnesium. Other than that, I've been told they're chemically identical, physically identical, except for those two differences.
Yeah, and if you look at your dark leafy vegetables, it is an excellent source of magnesium, but magnesium pairs wonderfully with chlorophyll. It helps it to store energy for the body to create more oxygen-rich hemoglobin, so I'm glad you brought that up.
All right, why don't you give us give the audience an idea of where they can find your website and the Power Herbs and so on, and
Take it away, Wendell. Okay, yes, they can go to the powerherbs.com website and request a free product catalog or to check out our products there, thepowerherbs.com, or they can simply call us toll-free at 866-229-3663, 866-229-3663, and the product catalog is free.
All right, Wendy, thanks very much for being on the program. We'll talk to you again next Thursday. And
thank you.
In the
bye-bye.
Meantime, have a good week. That's Wendy Wilson, herbalist at the Apothecary Herbs, powerherbs.com. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here at Financial Survival with Melody Cedarstrom. Program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What do folks need today, Melody?
Well, we're running another great little special on Swiss francs, the 20 Swiss francs. They're 0.1867 gold in their coins. They're beautiful little coins. They're brilliant, uncirculated. And we did a comparison yesterday. We went on to the online buyers. We did some, two online buyers. We did the firm in Minneapolis. We did some other popular firms. And each one, we came in with lower prices. And so we're running a great little special on Swiss francs for $268. $268. You can buy one. Or you can buy 100. So they can call us at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188.
Okay, Melody, sounds good. What's next?
And if the listeners have any questions for the program today, they can send them to questions@dgscoins.com, questions@dgscoins.com. And if they'd like to call the program, they can call 1-800-596-8191. That's 1-800-596-8191.
All right. What have we got? Where are we going to go now?
Well, here might be some good news for some. Here the GOP here are really trying to do something. They're going to cut the food stamps by as much as $4 billion annually in an effort to downsize a program that many think has become too bloated in recent years. So do you think that $4 billion is going to do much of anything?
It's hard to say what's going to happen. It's one of those things in this economy. If the unemployment rate is as great as people like John Williams claim, and their claims is that unemployment is up in the neighborhood of 23-24%, government says it's down in the neighborhood of 7%. If unemployment is as great as John Williams suggests, then trying to reduce those food stamps at this point in time is going to be problematic. Term they use in the government, this is problematic, meaning they could get in a bunch of trouble over this. I have no idea how the Republicans expect to pull that off, and I don't know what they think they're going to gain out of it particularly. And it's a difficult time. You know, it'd be a different situation if the economy was running well and people were had access, adequate access to food. We didn't have jobs declining, unemployment rising, inflation rising. Some people really depend on that food stamp subsidy and welfare. And I'm not saying that I'm in favor of it. But when you have people that are addicted to a program like that, and a lot of people are, it's going to be interesting reducing that program. I suppose they'll reduce it a little at a time. Did they say they were bringing it down $4 billion all at once, or they were bringing it down $4 billion over a period of several years?
Well, they're just trying to get something passed because, you know, they defeated the farm bill that initially went through earlier this year. And also what they're trying to do, it'd probably be more of a staggering because they're also trying to find the savings through the tightening of the eligibility standards and imposing new work requirements. And while I found this was kind of interesting, they were also trying to reduce the rolls by requiring drug testing and barring convicted murderers, rapists, and pedophiles from receiving food stamps.
Well, that means there'll be no food stamps for a lot of people in Congress, will there?
Yes, you're right.
The only people who can get them, illegal aliens, of course. They'll still have food stamps for illegal aliens, but the press, probably not.
They're not on the list.
We've got a similar line. Congress from the Washington Times reports that Congress will leave for summer recess with little accomplished. And they are saying, indeed, this year's Congress is on pace for one of the lowest productivity records in history, and both sides are pointing fingers at each other. They haven't passed much legislation lately. And they make it sound like this is a bad thing. I'm sitting here and thinking, this is good news. I mean, is the lack of legislation cause for finger pointing? Or is it cause for celebration? Should we vote out any Congress that fails to pass much legislation? Should we just, you haven't passed enough laws. We need more laws. That's what this country needs, are more laws. And you guys haven't passed more laws, and therefore we're voting you out. Or should we make it our business to identify every non-productive congressman and make sure we reelect him? We're looking for a few lazy guys and girls to get up there into Congress who will do no more harm than they've already done. I mean, I love gridlock. I think it's one of the great things, isn't it? One of the, you know, it's one of the best things that can happen in Congress typically. We had reports that we've talked about on this program a time or two in the last 10 days. Two economists on the East Coast calculated how much economic damage has been caused by government regulation. And it was their conclusion, and I saw the report. This is a serious report. We can debate whether their conclusions are right in terms of magnitude, but this is a serious and intelligent report. They calculate that the net loss to government regulation for the economy is about 2% per year. And therefore, they calculate that if the level of government regulation was the same today as it was in 1949, the average home, the median home income, median family income, it was the term they used for this country, which is currently $53,000 a year. If the government had no more regulations than we had back in 1949, the median family income would be over $300,000 per year. And what this is evidence that we don't need any more laws. We don't need any more government. They keep thinking that every time something goes wrong, the solution to the problem is, I know, let's increase the size of government. Let's raise taxes. Let's borrow more money. Let's let the government handle it. They have mismanaged at best, and that's giving them a benefit of the doubt. That presumes mismanagement. The term mismanagement presumes that the problems they've created have been created by accident. There's more than a few people who think they're doing it to us intentionally. It's not an accident. It's not just mismanagement or incompetence. The people are out. People in Congress are out to do harm to this nation. Now, I know that's hard to believe, and I'm not going to tell you that's God's truth. It's hard for a lot of people to believe, but it's not so hard for others to believe. There is a serious percentage in this country who believe the government is working against our best interests, not by accident, not out of ignorance, but by intent. That study by the economists, how many problems do you have that you couldn't solve if your income was increased by $250,000 a year? And that's what we're talking about. Thanks to government, you're making $250,000 less every year than you might otherwise be making. There might be some potholes out in the street in front of your house, but if you made an extra $250,000 a year, could you fix those potholes yourself? I mean, there has to be ways, if we had that much extra money coming in the door, we would all be better off. And so when Congress, when the Washington Times reports that Congress it's one of the lowest productivity records in history, I read that as an optimistic sign. It may be that we might be able to skate through this mess. We might be able to skate through after all if we could just get Congress and the Federal Reserve and the rest of the people in the government to leave us alone. We can handle this if we can get government off our backs. So, anyway, there's my rant du jour on government, Melody.
Unfortunately, there are some things that they could do to change things around and to make things better. However, we also have another problem coming up, as you mentioned, that they do go on leave beginning, when do they begin? Tomorrow or when? Tomorrow or what day is today?
I guess so. I don't know. Wednesday.
In four days, they go for their annual August recess. They don't come all the way through September 6th.
I hope all the bars in Washington, D.C. have made enough money to carry them through the month of August, because Congress won't be there to support them.
Well, that's true. However, there's still one guy there that's going to be business as usual. And I got a report today about, we remember Jay Carney had said that the president has a very big item on his agenda this month when everybody's gone. And he is planning to stand with a globalist and sign the United Nations Arms Trade Treaty. And so it's possible that he could be signing that. Now, even if he does sign it, it still has to go through the Senate. So when they return, they will have to address the issue. But, you know, he's done things before. He made appointments when these people are on vacation and gone, so it seems that there might be another battle that is coming in the U.S. Senate.
Well, with all the time Obama spends taking vacations and all the time the Congress spends taking vacations or not getting anything done, it's amazing that this country isn't prospering more than it is. All right, when do they find time to actually do something to make us angry? They must be putting in overtime or something like that, Melody. They've got to be working overtime. What else do we have?
Well, I just have something here. I thought it was interesting. We have many listeners to the north of us in Canada, and they have decided to build a pipeline. TransCanada is to build a pipeline. They announced today, and it's a $12 billion plan to pipe 1.1 million barrels of oil per day from Western Canada to the country's Atlantic coast. And that would be moving enough oil to replace all imports in Eastern Canada and still have enough left for exporting crude oil overseas. And the pipeline is going to be the most expensive in TransCanada's history, and it would run from Hardisty, Alberta, to St. John, New Brunswick, ending where a new deep-water marine terminal will be built to handle the world's largest crude-carrying vessels. So Canada was very upset when Obama had nixed the Keystone pipeline, and so now they're going to build this. They're still also hoping to ship crude oil as far as Asia, and they said it can still be competitive. It's certainly easier to ship from the West Coast, but they can still put in some competitive bids. So they'll be looking to open up oil sales to Asia, to China, India, and even to Europe and to the Eastern Seaboard. So
how about Iran?
Wasn't listed.
Wasn't listed. Iran's kind of on, they're kind of the no-no list right now, but if they're paying in gold, and I think they, India's offered to pay Iran in gold, who knows? It may open another little avenue where Canada may decide to sell some oil to Iran. And if they do, President Obama will be a little bit upset, but he'll probably get over it. Speaking about government not being upset, here's something. Edward Snowden has been granted temporary asylum in Russia and has left the Moscow airport where he'd been stranded for more than a month. The White House says it is evaluating the utility of an anticipated meeting between President Barack Obama and Russian President Vladimir Putin during the G20 meeting in Moscow in September after Russia granted temporary asylum to NSA leaker Edward Snowden. In other words, the government is threatening not to talk to Russian Premier President Vladimir Putin if he allows Snowden to stay in Russia. And this is where here's something from Jay Carney, spokesman for the Obama administration. And he says, Mr. Snowden is not a whistleblower. He's accused of leaking classified information. He's been charged with 3 felony counts, and he should be returned to the United States as soon as possible, where he can be accorded full due process and protections. The move by the Russian government undermines a long-standing record of law enforcement cooperation that has recently been on the upswing since the Boston Marathon bombings. Again, this is from White House spokesman Carney, and I read it and I'm saying, ha, ha, ha. Are we going to send everybody who's been charged with a crime, should we send them to a foreign country? For example, it's my understanding one or more foreign nations have filed criminal charges against George W. Bush and Dick Cheney for war crimes. All right? Are we going to extradite former President Bush, former Secretary of State? I believe that it was what Cheney was. Isn't that what Cheney was, or was he? I don't recall, but in any case.
He was VP. When? Oh, when Bush was.
Yeah, that's right. VP. Yes. My mistake is. Yes. Are they going to send Bush and Cheney over to whatever countries have filed criminal charges against them? Is that part of our long-standing record of law enforcement cooperation? And on this, you look at these reports, and they just make you just wince. It is as if they feel obligated to craft a report that can be understood by sixth graders. If you have a seventh grade education, these reports probably won't be very impressive. But if you're a sixth grader, sixth grade graduate, not a sixth grade dropout, you understand, sixth grade graduate, then you can read what the government publishes and perhaps even believe it. But I'll say this about, here's another one from the Washington Times. Headline, Obama opened to changes at NSA. Intel officials fight to maintain secrecy. There's the headline. The Obama administration signaled that it's ready to accept some changes to the National Security Agency telephone snooping program. As intelligence officials fought fiercely against congressional critics to preserve what they say is a vital tool in rooting out terrorist plots. I don't know. I read this, and at least it says that Snowden has had a real effect. Snowden has done something to diminish the police state in this country. He's done something to diminish the government spying on the American people. The Obama administration is at least ready to accept some changes. That means they'll probably continue doing what they're doing, but hide it in another hidey hole. But regardless, they're at least willing to accept some changes. That means Snowden has won to some degree. We're going to take a break for some commercial announcements. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
We have a question coming in from Ivan. According to Der Spiegel, the first time Silvio Berlusconi is threatened with a legally binding conviction. Italy's highest court is due to rule this week on the former premier's tax fraud verdict. It could finally mean an end to the magnate's political career and spell serious trouble for the fragile governing coalition. Will this finally end the three-ring circus about Berlusconi and concentrate on serious problems such as a tanking economy?
I don't know. It's one of those things where it's like it's the Italian version of Dancing with the Stars. You know, it's just one of those things that attracts people's attention. And I don't know, Berlusconi is perhaps perhaps a crook, probably a crook. He's in politics. He's succeeded dramatically. He's certainly not averse to criminal activity. It would be a good thing probably to get rid of him, but who are you going to find to replace him? And what evidence is there that the replacement is going to be any less corrupt than Berlusconi? You're dealing with a system that is fundamentally unethical, fundamentally corrupt, fundamentally greedy, covetous. It's true in Italy, it's true in Germany, it's true in England, it's true in the United States. Where can you point to politicians that routinely stand up and try to do what's right for their country? The one exception that comes to mind, and I won't even say this is true, but the one possible exception that comes to mind is Vladimir Putin over in the Soviet Union. He appears to me to be trying to do what's right for his country. I don't mean that he's a hero. I don't mean he's a good guy. But at least he seems to be doing what's right for his country. He discourages homosexuality. He encourages Christianity in Russia. That's so surprising after their background as Soviet Union and communists and not wanting any reference to God. Putin, who came through the Soviet system, the communist system, he has understood that Russia needs a moral foundation. And he's told people that want to emigrate into his country. He said, you come here, you're going to learn our language. We're not going to try to accommodate you. This is Russia. You will learn our language. You will embrace our culture. And if that's a problem, go find another culture that you want. I hear things like this from Putin. I say, my God, wouldn't it be great if there was someone in this country who had significant authority who said the same thing, who was trying to do what was right for this country rather than do what's right for it. Crooks, criminals, wealthy people that are too big to jail, corporations that are too big to fail. I don't know. It's one of those things you look at it and you sit back and say, good grief. So Berlusconi. He's just another crook on an international governmental system that seems to welcome, invite, and condone, and even create crooks. So what's going to happen? If he disappears, will anything change? I don't think much will change. You'll have a new face. You'll have the new crook du jour over there. Operating, pulling, in positions of power in Italy. The crook du jour. I'm not sure if you can say crook du jour because du jour is French. Do you think the Italians would be offended if I referred to their politicians as the crooks du jour? Or should I refer to them as the crooks and some sort of an Italian equivalent?
I think that's entirely up to you, Al. We are worldwide, so. But you have to remember, too, that we have so many. I mean, if you look at the agenda of a one-world government, you do have the elitists, and whether they're crooks or whether or not, they do have an agenda. And their agenda is to promote this one-world government, the combining of governments, the combining of countries. And we're seeing it through the free trade. Through all these free trade agreements, through the lowering of our standards here in the States and moving all our jobs. So it's more than just being a crook, Al. It's the combination of this of their agenda. These are approved elitists. They're members of all the groups. We mentioned them, the trilaterals, the Bilderbergers, the list goes on and on and on. And so it's they do have a bigger agenda than just robbing the nations of their wealth and from the people.
I agree. You're right. They're not just crooks. They are more appropriately described as treasonous whores. They're in it for the money if they can make it, if they can grab it. The money, the sex, the power, whatever it else. I mean, they
sure,
really
that's
are
their payoff.
Terrible
that's
people.
Their payoff.
But it's not. You're right about this. It's not just a question of wanting more money, bigger cars, bigger houses, more wild women, whatever. It's not just that. At bottom, we're talking about treason. We're talking about people in positions of power within nations that are supposed to be representing the best interests of their nation, who are nevertheless on the sly working to make that nation disappear by having it homogenized with all the rest of the nations where they all blend together. Turn the nation into an administrative unit rather than a culture of people, something that, you know, people could once have taken pride in and felt a certain amount of patriotism about. They're just, nations are being lost. They're at least being diminished at the moment. Forces are working against them, and Berlusconi's probably one of them. I guarantee you Obama is another one. We have the same problems, the same kinds of problems in this country. So what are you going to do? Well, you're going to try to get people awake. You're going to try to understand the problem yourself, try to learn how to describe the problem, hope other people will pay attention to the problem, and hope that people will stand up on their hind legs and say, enough, enough. We got to go back and do what's right for this country, not what's right for the New World Order, not what's right for China or Mexico, Canada, or Europe, or Africa, or South America. Got to put America first. And that's what we elect them to do, and that's what we expect them to do. And yet, these treasonous whores in Congress, in the Senate, in the White House, they work in ways that are contrary to the best interests of the American people. They do it for the sake of New World Order, global harmony, but who benefits from it?
Wall Street.
Not the average American. We don't benefit. The only people that can benefit from global free trade are the people that have multinational corporations that are in a position to have factories in one country and sell products in another country. They stand to profit. They stand to do very well under global free trade because they can use the cheapest labor and sell to the where they can get the best price from wealthy markets. Works well. Global free trade is great for multinational corporations. But for a man who's trying to support a wife and kids, for someone who's running a business, a local business in Dallas or Philadelphia or whatever, it doesn't help us. We're not improved by global free trade. And inevitably, if Americans have to compete with Chinese wages, we're going to see American wages drop until they begin to approach the level seen in China. It's a terrible, terrible situation, and it's been caused by our own government. We aren't going broke. You know, again, that article from the Economist on the East Coast about the except for government regulation, the median family income in this country would be over $300,000 a year, where it is currently instead about $53,000 a year. We're missing $250,000 because of this government. The government is not just a bunch of screw-ups. They are your adversary. This nation is being destroyed by its own government. And if you people want to put up with it, well, welcome to it. It's your choice. But if you don't want to put up with it, you can gather evidence, gather some friends, hold meetings, elect. Make it your business to elect politicians who are going to do what's right for this country, not what is damaging to this country. What else do we have?
We got another question from Ivan. He says, according to Der Spiegel, in a departure from the Vatican's traditional view of gays, Pope Francis told reporters on Monday that he doesn't judge priests for their sexual orientation. Is this the end of the Catholic Church and its moral stand for the past 2,000 years?
I wouldn't say it's the end of the Catholic Church, but it can't enhance the standing of the Pope. This is like going to a Cowboys football game here in Dallas. Huh? You're pretty much expected to root for the Cowboys. You might be a fan for the opposing team that's coming into town. It's all right. You can get away with that. But you are expected. If you're going to go to a Cowboys football game, especially if you're going to wear a Cowboys jersey and the rest of the paraphernalia they have for fans, it's expected that you are going to cheer for the Dallas Cowboys. Same thing is true and for the Washington Redskins and for the Chicago Bears. When you're in their stadium, cheer for them. We have people in the Catholic Church right now that are essentially not cheering for the Catholic Church. The Bible says homosexuality is an abomination, right? There are people who say, no, it's not, and maybe that shouldn't, and the Bible shouldn't say that, and God didn't really mean that, and God loves everybody. I don't know what the truth of the matter is in terms of what God thinks about this. I'm not going to tell you that, but I am going to tell you that the Bible says on more than one occasion homosexuality is an abomination. So how are you going to claim to be a Christian or a Catholic who is espousing the faith based on the Bible, and nevertheless say, well, we can pick and choose the parts. We're gonna be great Christians. We're gonna be great Catholics, but some parts of the Bible aren't politically correct, so we don't have to listen to them today. It's just offensive. If you're going to be a Cowboys fan, root for the Cowboys. If you're going to be Catholic, root for the Bible. If you're going to be a Christian, root for the Bible. You can, you know, you. What are you going to do, Melody? You can't just pick and choose. You've got to go with it. You don't want to be a, if you're in favor of homosexuality, get out of the Pope's office. Quit. Go away. Get yourself a job on talk radio or something. I don't care. But there should be some integrity. And instead, what we find is people don't have integrity. They have this they've become homogenized. Homogeneity. I'm not sure if that's the correct word. But what I mean by that is there is a politically correct position that we are all expected to take. And if you step too far away from that position, you may even be accused of hate speech. Right? But you talk about homosexuality relative to the church. They've had a single stand on it for a couple thousand years. And now it's just being thrown off to the side.
What I find fascinating now is you have all these countries all at the same time changing their laws, their positions, on all at the same time, or within a relative few weeks, month.
I agree.
And it's just like, okay, what is it about? I mean, you had riots in France. They didn't want the gay marriage to pass. Nope, we're passing it. You have this with them. I mean, it's happening all at once, and I just...
Who is pulling those strings on an international basis? If we saw this happening in one country, or if it were only in terms of a single religion, we could sit back and not necessarily be amazed. We could be a little surprised. We could say, look, what a bunch of dummies the Catholics are, but we're seeing it in other churches. Huh? This is one of those things that you have to wonder. Who is pulling the strings? How is this orchestrated, and who are the powers behind this orchestration, and what do they expect to achieve? I've talked about it on the program before, but one of the key points on this homosexuality issue is, what is the life expectancy for homosexuals? The government, by law, they ordered the people, actuaries and insurance companies, stop calculating the life expectancy for homosexuals back in the 1980s. And at the time, I know I published an article by a doctor. I can't even remember his name. It was back in the early 1990s, 20 years ago. I published an article, and the doctor done research on his own and tracked mortality rates and calculated that the average homosexual was losing somewhere between 20 and 30 years of life expectancy by making that lifestyle choice. That was back in the early 90s when the AIDS epidemic was... perhaps more virulent than it is right now.
I don't think it has anything to do with life expectancy. I think if you believe, if it's, because we've talked about it being a spiritual warfare, then we know who is behind it all that is bringing it together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we are coming to the place people talk about end times. I mean, this is where it's a sign. It's a symptom. It tells us what it is. And it should say, wake up, pay attention.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. It is evidence of something bigger, something more important, and it's evidence that every one of us should be paying attention and not just shrugging and rolling our eyes. We're out of time, folks, so we've got to go. I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.